Easements versus Virginia ABC. Ms. Alexander for ABC, and I'm not confident of which.
Jason Greaves, Your
Honor. Mr. Greaves for Small Amusements. Do you wish to reserve any of your time for rebuttal?
No, Your Honor. I'm going to be very brief. Good morning, judges. Jason Greaves on behalf of Mall Amusements LLC, doing business as Kingpins. This is here on our appeal from the decision of the Fairfax County Circuit Court, which was there on an appeal from an administrative decision of the ABC, Alcoholic Beverage Control Board. We're here on our assignment of error based on what we believe was a violation of due process in that the administrative hearing officer below at the ABC level acted in a prosecutorial manner, stepping over the line, so to speak, from being a neutral decision maker into being an advocate for the board.
When I tried cases, I used to get very, very frustrated when a judge would ask questions.
Yes.
And so I understand the frustration.
And Your Honor,
but I don't think that anybody would contend that a circuit court judge, a United States district court judge, any trial judge asking a witness a question is a constitutional violation. And if it's not, how can this be?
Well, Your Honor, the distinction I would draw, because we don't dispute that the judge had the absolute right to ask questions, and the case law and fine grind that we're familiar with, affirmed by this court from Fairfax, which our firm was also involved in, I think the court makes it clear that, yes, the administrative law judge, just as a normal judge, is entitled to ask clarifying questions. But what we're saying here is that the record as a whole, we believe, demonstrates that this wasn't merely clarifying something that the judge didn't understand. This was the judge laying foundation for evidence that was essential for carrying the burden for the board. So,
while I ask you about that, Mr. Greaves, because when you look at the appendix, the portion where she actually asks questions for agent, is it pronounced Keck?
I am not actually entirely sure, Your Honor.
Let's say for agent Keck, it will go
sure.
With Keck. That begins really only two pages of the transcript, and it seems to be really only on whether this was her first purchase of alcohol. First, was it the only purchase that was made that day? And the answer is yes. And then it's apparently the first purchase of her career. And then there's a question about, was it 30 seconds or 60 seconds or somewhere in between? If that's all it is, which seems to be less than in fine grind, where there's more of a foundation apparently being laid, but let's focus on just this case for now. If that was error, why isn't that just harmless, given everything else that's in the record?
Well, Your Honor, again, talking about the entire record, and counsel Wayne Biggs and the circuit court brought up just the breadth of the record. If you go back to the beginning, where they're talking about photographic evidence is being admitted, marked by the administrative law judge, and is being presented without a proper foundation, objection is made to the foundation, and the judge's response is, well, hold on, let me finish, and then asks the foundational questions to help get the photographs in. So it's not just those questions at the end where they're kind of clarifying the questions or helping to repair the testimony of the minor about whether it's 60 seconds, whether it's 10 seconds.
Is it your position that it would be a constitutional violation for a circuit court judge to ask somebody when a photograph is being offered to just turn and say, did you take this photograph on that day? Is that a constitutional violation?
I think that pushes the boundary, but this isn't just did you take the picture.
That's my question, though. Stick with that. Is that a constitutional violation?
I would have to. I think it would depend upon the circumstances.
Right. The prosecution is trying to get in a photograph taken by a police officer. Prosecution, Commonwealth attorney, for whatever reason, hasn't asked that question. There's a fight over the admissibility about the foundation. The judge just turns out of frustration because the lawyers are arguing and says, did you take this photo on that day?
And like Your Honor said, I think that would be a very frustrating position as a as an attorney to have the judge helping the other side. And I think that, again, that...
But that's not my question. It's not whether it's frustrating or not. It's whether it's a constitutional violation.
I believe that approaches that line that we're talking about here.
It's not whether it approaches the line. Doesn't your position necessarily require us to find that that would be a constitutional violation?
That I think I have to say that it does, Your Honor. I think that that crosses the line.
I think we've all pretty much experienced that occurrence. If a circuit court judge could do that, somebody who is firmly in the judiciary, here we have a process, whether the administrative state's a good idea or not, where ABC has been delegated legislative, executive, and judicial functions. And there's no question that the Virginia Constitution gives them that. Article 3, Section 1 makes that clear. Isn't it less of a problem when a hearing officer does it than when a judge does it, by definition, because ABC employs all of these people?
I would say that it makes no real difference here because, again, under the statute, we're entitled to an impartial hearing officer just like a judge in a regular courtroom. An Article 3 courtroom is required to be an impartial decision maker.
But if it's not a constitutional violation for the judge to ask the question, then clearly the hearing officer can, especially with relaxed rules and the tripartite nature of administrative agencies, correct?
Well, I would take a step back and just say that the...
Well, can I just ask you a follow-up on Judge Russell's question? I mean, don't we have considerable case law that says it's a much more relaxed standard in an administrative hearing than it is even in circuit court?
Yes, and as far as factual findings, that's right. But we're talking about here about the fact-finding process, which doesn't get the same kind of deference as the actual findings of fact. So I'm not here to dispute the actual specific facts that were...
It's not additional deference to the fact-finder, is it? Isn't it a relaxation of the normal rules of evidence?
Correct. But again, those rules of evidence are for the findings of the fact, and again, there is case law that I think that we've cited to that says that the fact-finding process itself does not get the same deference. So regardless of whether there is a relaxed standard of evidence, if the hearing officer is laying foundation, is marshaling the evidence for the board, I think that's more than enough to say that this isn't just a relaxed issue, this is a due process issue.
If we were to disagree with you on that, I'm saying if, for sake of this question, if we were to disagree with you on that, but to find some merit in your argument that where the questions are being asked for the officer, that was error, given the rather, as I mentioned, rather brief number of questions those were, and the other evidence in the record is Shelby Whitmer's testimony that was in answer to those questions really necessary for a determination on the merits? Or wouldn't that be harmless here?
Well, getting to the harmless issue is that harmless error doesn't necessarily apply here because what we're talking about is a substantive provision of statute, which is the requirement of a neutral decision maker. That's substantive law. And therefore, harmless error, I don't think, really applies.
Harmless error with major constitutional errors. I mean, that happens. Decisions like that are made all the time.
But in
capital murder cases where the court makes an error and it's found to be harmless and beyond a reasonable doubt, here you don't even have constitutional harmless error question, obviously.
And even if harmless error applies, again, the totality of the record, I think, when you're walking into your hearing and the judge is, again, marshaling the evidence for the board, I don't think that you can call that harmless. Even, again, because I'm not here talking about the specific facts. I'm just talking about the process itself.
Well, let's go back to my question, though. If we disagree with you on that, if we were to hold otherwise, are the responses that were made by Shelby Whitmer in response to only the questions that the hearing officer asked for Agent Kekik. Isn't that essentially covered in the rest of the record?
I would concede that those narrow answers, if taken in isolation, I agree that that's probably not going to affect the outcome. But I'm saying that as a whole, the record...
You just disagree with the premise of my question there.
I think so, Your Honor, yes.
Mr. Greaves, help me follow your logic to its natural conclusion a little bit. In every general district court in the Commonwealth, the Commonwealth Attorney's Office does not participate in average traffic violations. Certainly don't participate in every misdemeanor. No offense, not in every Commonwealth Attorney's Office. Are you telling me that every time a judge sets the framework for those with an investigating officer, it's a constitutional violation?
Again, I think that would depend upon the extent to which the judge is developing the evidence for the Commonwealth. I mean, if the officer doesn't make some critical error, like doesn't identify which jurisdiction he pulled the person over, and then the judge asks that question, I think that does cross over the line in the way that we're talking about.
So if the judge asks him, where did this occur?
I think
it's crossing the line.
If the judge asks specifically, what county was this in, if there's an ambiguity, let's say he says, I pulled him over on Route 50, Route 50 could be in any number of different counties, and the judge asks, well, what county was this? That would be developing the evidence for the Commonwealth to establish their case in chief.
He's not entitled to clarify an officer's testimony.
I'm not saying that.
Wouldn't that be exactly what that is? This occurred on Route 50. In which city or county did that occur? Certainly not leading him to the answer, but it is clarifying it. I mean, how on earth are traffic violations or certain misdemeanors, your average assault and battery, how on earth are they going to be tried if a judge can't ask any foundational questions?
Again, I would say that it depends upon the extent to which, if the judge is clearly trying to establish a case for the Commonwealth, that's different than just clarifying a question.
I'm not talking about the judge prosecuting a case where he's leading the officer to the correct result. We're not talking about leading questions here, but you also, as a judge, if I'm defending a case and the judge just says, tell me what your investigation revealed, officer, I'm going to have an immediate problem with that, because that's just simply asking a question that allows the officer to vomit up whatever he sees fit in the case.
And in that case, you would have a defense attorney to object to anything that's improper that the officer happens to say. And if the judge is then helping circumvent those objections,
But without the leading questions, I mean, isn't it possible that the questions to the administrative law judge's questions, given the way they were asked, could have been the opposite of what they were, and that therefore the foundation wouldn't have been established? Or are we going on we all know that the photograph was going to come in anyway, because we all know it was done right, but we were just sitting on the technical objection, and therefore when the judge asked in a neutral way the foundational question, that we all knew what the answer was.
Well, in this case,
the question wasn't leading.
In this case, we don't know, because the officer didn't actually know who took the photograph, whether it was him or his partner, and there was...
So what's the harm?
The harm is that, again, we're coming into a situation where the person who's ruling on evidence is the person who's soliciting that evidence. So I think there's a distinction between that and asking an officer what happened.
But that's the judge who's taking the evidence, soliciting evidence. I mean, how is that different?
Well, the difference is if the judge had merely said, tell me about this photograph, or get this photograph admitted, and the officer doesn't do it correctly, and then corrects the officer and continues to lead that officer.
Does the photograph accurately depict the scene of the accident? That's impermissible.
Again, it would depend upon the totality of the record.
Well, the issue is the damage caused in the accident. Does the photograph accurately depict the scene of the accident? Judge asks that question to the officer.
I think that would be fine, but
how is that different?
The difference is that if...
Because that's necessary to lay the evidentiary foundation for the admission of the photograph. It must accurately depict the scene. So without that statement, the photograph does not come into evidence.
Correct. And but the officer was also there and can testify to that. But if the officer can't identify who took that photo, which camera it was, what time of day, if he can't remember these kinds of details, and the judge is just bringing him forward through that and admitting the evidence anyway, I think that's where the difference is.
Well, but that's not your argument. Your argument isn't that the evidence was impermissibly admitted. That's a different question. The question is, was it wrong for the judge to even ask a question that could assist in the admission of the evidence?
And that might have helped your side.
In fact, the answers did help your side, arguably, because it established that the officer couldn't tell you who took the photo.
Right, but then the judge admitted the photo anyway.
And if you had objected to
We did object to that.
Well, if you had appealed on the grounds that the photo shouldn't have been admitted, we're in a different posture, aren't we?
Possibly.
Your time has expired. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Good morning.
Good morning, Alexander. You have 15 minutes.
All right. I'm going to just make a few quick points, and then feel free to interrupt me with questions, as I'm sure you will. The proceeding satisfied the minimum due process requirements for an administrative hearing. If any error was committed, which I do not concede, but if any error was committed, then it was a harmless error, and so it's not grounds to reverse or remand this to the circuit court for further remand to the administrative agency. And I just also want to note, I did not put this in my brief, but the appellant did not preserve its request for attorney's fees. So in the event that you find against, or that you find that the appellant substantially prevails, I would say that attorney's fees are off the off the table. I want to draw a distinction between someone acting in a prosecutorial role and as the fact finder. So in the context of this case, the questions that the hearing officer asked, I would say, elicited evidence that was already gathered and brought to the hearing. This was not the hearing officer acting in a prosecutorial role. She was not going out and gathering evidence and bringing it to the proceeding. All of the evidence that was presented, and for that matter objected to, merely supported facts that had already been disclosed to the licensee, to the appellant, prior to the proceedings. So if you change the facts just a bit and the investigative file or the request for hearing, as we call it at ABC, had not disclosed that ID had been checked, and the hearing officer elicited testimony and evidence about an ID being checked, then you may have a situation where the hearing officer crossed a line and started to elicit evidence that was not already prepared and brought.
If I understand their objection, it's not that they weren't aware that these were going to be the things that the ABC was attempting to prove. That strikes me as the equivalent of a pleading. This is what we are going to try to prove. That doesn't affect how you have to go about proving it, does it?
No. I mean, you still need sufficient foundational evidence. And in the ABC hearings, the standard is reasonable cause to believe, which is a very low standard, as your honors know. And I would say that one statement, and I highlighted it here, but now I've lost my page, one statement where the agent unelicited states that the underage buyer walked into the restaurant, ordered a drink, ID was checked, and the agent provided all of this from his firsthand knowledge, that's enough. That's all the evidence you need, because we do not have any evidence rebutting that a sale was made or that ID was checked, and ID being checked is a key here. So, you know, yes, it's one thing to put in your investigative report what you intend to prove, and another to actually prove it at the hearing and provide foundational evidence, but all of the evidence that has been objected to, I would say if you throw it out, and the hearing officer even said this in her decision, if you throw it out, you still have a substantiated charge. You still have reasonable cause to believe that an underage sale was made.
If we had the situation here where the hearing officer had asked questions or had seemingly said, that's not the question you want to ask. Isn't this what you want to ask? A sort of coaching. Would that be a problem?
I believe that it would be. I don't want to concede a point that my client might not want me to concede, but I do think that there's a line. The due process requirements require that an impartial decision maker be provided, and if the neutral starts to shape the evidence that is being presented in a in what I would say is sort of a biased, partial way, correcting the presentation of evidence so that the evidence that's actually presented is evidence that's more likely to result in a substantiation of a charge, then I do think that that crosses a line. Again, if that is a harmless error, it would not be reversible error here because I believe this is under Romanet 3 in 2.24027, which requires that the hearing, that the agency observed required procedure and that where any failure therein is not mere harmless error. So, again, it wouldn't be reason to reverse and remand in this case.
Just to follow up on that, the part of the appendix that I referred to earlier with Mr. Breeze begins right at the bottom of 65 and goes to the very top of 68,
which
is where the hearing officer, Ms. Williamson, asks questions for Agent Keckin.
Correct.
I understand your argument is that is, if it is error, it's harmless. But that you don't agree that that's error. Can you explain a little more why you think? Because obviously a request could have been made for counsel from the Attorney General's office to be there. Why is that not error?
Well, as Your Honor knows, the Attorney General can provide counsel. And that's 2.2-509, but the Attorney General is not required to provide counsel, and there's nothing in this case that says that the Attorney General was requested to provide counsel in this case. And now, I'll let you know that that ABC does have a special counsel appointment who prosecutes certain cases, but ABC handles hundreds of cases each year, and there just isn't enough manpower at the Attorney General's office to provide those cases. So ABC is in a sticky spot. There's a reference to the Attorney General providing advice that the agent or asking questions is the unauthorized practice of law, and so the hearing officer has to be in this sort of referee role that may go beyond what some other administrative hearing officers sort of how they act in their role. But I don't think that here it crosses the line of turning the hearing officer into a partial decision maker. There's nothing inherent in these specific questions that would show improper conduct or bias. I don't think that the mere asking of questions that have been proffered by an agent is per se improper conduct or would show bias.
Is there any distinction between the scenario that Judge Atlee laid out regarding traffic offenses and misdemeanor offenses in general district court and what happened here in your mind?
I think that there is. And I don't practice criminal law, and I won't admit to being in traffic court before you all. But it's my understanding that, of course, that those are criminal proceedings, and there are constitutional rights involved. Here,
well, I guess let me ask my question a little differently. Is there any distinction that does not favor ABC?
No.
Okay.
I don't believe so, because I don't believe that the case law supports there's a constitutional right in a license. Yes, there is a property interest in a license, and due process needs to be provided before it is taken away from the licensee. Are there any other questions? I would be happy to answer them. Otherwise, I'm just going to go ahead.
So.
consistent with the court's conditions, we'll come down and greet you.
All right.